Your relationship with your grandmother, did you feel closer to her than your mother, or?
My own relationship, with my grandmother was very close. All of us were very close to children, but I especially, since I was the youngest. And because I was sent to Jewish school and I learned how to read and write and speak and did more with it than the other children did, so I had a special relationship with her. We used to read together, so. But basically, it was because I was the youngest, and I think the others were going off into the world, and I was still at home. She was very important to us. My mother worked all through our younger years, and the grandma was at home when we came home from school, and when we were around. And of course, she was a special figure for us because she was the cook and the baker and the told stories, and we loved her very much.
The last time we left off in the tape, we were talking about your life in the 1934s, in the 1934s. What I want to do is I want to back up and talk about your mother and her political involvement and your father's political involvement. Did your mother ever mention anything about a National Safety Council? Did she ever talk about that?
No. What is that?
Did she ever mention, or did he ever mention anything about the American Federation of Labor?
Well, yeah, like my mother was a member of the, I told you that my mother was a member of the ILGW, the International Ladies Garment Workers Union. So that was part of the American Federation of Labor at that time. And my father was, in the earlier years, he was not in the union. He was mostly worked either for himself or in these laundries, which at that time were unorganized. But they were very much related to labor unions, very much in favor of labor unions. My mother was in many strikes. We went to the picket line with her on many occasions.
That's what I was going to ask you. Did you take part in picketing with your mother?
Oh, sure. We took part in picketing and in demonstrations and in all the things that happened around the neighborhood. Since my day in Lower Bronx was different, I think, than your day. In my day, there the Young Communist League, the Socialist Party, the Communist Party would hold street meetings regularly every week. There would be questions, discussion, catcalling, fights, whatever it was. But there was a lot of free discussion on the streets and on many subjects, many questions of the day. I told you about the first important event politically that struck me was the killing of Sacco and Vanzetti. Mm-hmm. And, to me that was an outstanding thing politically because we had followed the whole story and so on. But we participated. We went to all kinds of things with our folks, so they took us up.
Do you remember the earliest age that you went out with your mother to a demonstration or picketing?
No, I don't. I can't place it that exactly.
How old were you when you joined the Young Pioneers?
The Young Pioneers, I was about 12, 13.
Did your mother ever mention anything about the Women's Trade Union League?
No.
When you were working doing various jobs and trying to unionize people, did you have a large mixture of nationalities in the places where you worked, like at Armor Packing Company?
Oh, yeah. Well, Armor was basically, at that time, the Polish people were, and basically these were young people whom I was working with, because we were all and black people and other Slavic groups. You had all kinds of people with national background there.
Did you find it difficult to do any union organizing because there was such a diverse mixture of backgrounds?
Well, it's always difficult in the sense of that certain feelings exist, and you have to break through. You have to get through. Have to make the issue of the company, the problems that the company was facing with them, more important than possibly things that happened on the outside, relationships on the outside. At that point, the Polish people were not too friendly with the black people. It was very difficult in the back of the eyes. There were all kinds of feelings of that kind. In fact, many of them did never disappear, and many of them did not really disappear in a large amount until after the United Packing House Workers Union was formed, which was in later years, after the CIO was formed. It became one of the first of the CIO unions. And the unionization brought them together. And, you have to break through. Anytime you're trying to organize, you have to break through everything in order to make them understand that the only problem is the company. The only enemy is the company, and all the other things can be resolved in that fashion.
Will you explain the terminology, colonizer?
Well, when we were in the members of the Young Communist Leagues, part of our understanding and study was the need to organize the working class. And the most important place for organizing the working class was at the shop level and in the shops. And therefore, where we had shops where we had no people whom we knew, no one who, in many cases, no unions at that time, no way to get started an organization, the members of the Young Communist League were asked to get into the plants, to go to work in the plants. And they were known as colonizers. In other words, they were not people who came out of the shops at that time, but were sent into the shops and went to work and became, regular workers and got themselves settled and so on and got to know the workers and got to know the problems and so on, and then helped to organize around the issues inside the plant and as quickly as they could, or whatever time it was possible, they would try to organize, particularly at that time, into unions, because in those years there were very few unions in the mass production industries, and these were mainly the shops we went to. Now, we tried to go for what was known as basic industry, where there were steel plants, where there were auto plants. In New York City, there was an awful lot of smaller industry. We went radio and television and machine was becoming a large industry there. We went into there. And this is when I was still at home. And important plant, what was considered important plants in each community. So the Young Communist League clubs and groups would decide where they were going to concentrate. And once the people got in there and got settled, then the group would concentrate from the outside. They would put out a leaflet. When something happened, they would put out a regular newspaper. They would distribute a Daily Worker, the communist paper, the national communist paper. And they would carry on, go to visit people in the homes. They would carry on all kinds of agitation and organization, trying to cull out those workers who were ready and willing to mount the struggle, and use and develop a group that would be the basis for unionization in those years.
Your parents, were they members of the Communist Party?
At that time, they were not. They were very close. They were members of fraternal organizations, and they were very good. They would raise money and support the Communist Party and the struggles and so on, but as I remember it, they were not in the Communist Party at that time.
In later life, they
joined the Communist Party.
What drew you to the Communist Party as opposed to maybe the Socialist Party?
Well, I would say my folks were influential in drawing us to the Communist Party. there's a bit more of history there of the Jewish people. When the Jewish immigrants came over, the Socialist Party had the main sway amongst them, and they formed at that time a fraternal group called the Arbeiterin, which was the purpose was to help the people with their problems. The loan organizations that unions have, credit unions. They had social functions, and they tried to give them a place where they would meet their own, their own folks, and where they would at least have some understanding and a place to come with problems. And there was quite a bit of struggle in the Arbeiterin, and some of the more radical Jewish people felt that they were betrayed in the union organization. The Arbeiterin was a supporter, for instance, of the International Ladies Garment Workers Union. They felt they were betrayed in not given strong enough leadership against the companies, and therefore there was quite a bit of a factional struggle, if you want to call it that, for a long time. Eventually, they set up a separate left organization called the International Workers' Order, the IWO, if you've heard of that, which was a very great insurance, started with insurance, but it served that same purpose, and where they felt that they could develop the kind of education and the kind of background and so on for themselves and for their kids that were more supportive of a class struggle than what had happened to the Arbeiterin. It started out in a more radical vein, but as you know, many cases that's true. And therefore, they were more supportive of the communist movement than they were of the socialist movement as such. Now, during the time of Sacco and Vanzetti that I talked about, everybody was working together. So at least, and maybe they were arguing somewhere nationally or internationally, but in our community, everybody was working together for the defense and for the saving of, for preventing the killing of Sacco and Vanzetti, so that Norman Thomas led the torch parade that I told you about. But the communists were as much a part of it as Norman Thomas was. Of course, the Communist Party split came to being a little later than that. But anyway, so that I think that would tell you why. So we went, our folks directed us actually to the communist movement.
While you were in the Young Pioneers and growing up in New York, what were early courtships like? Did you date?
I did not date very much. For one thing, I was younger. I was running with an older crowd, and I was a bit younger, and I was really immersed in a whole number of things. Mostly we ran as a group. By joining the Pioneers, by joining the Young Communist League, we were almost always in groups. And I had no sexual relationships at that time. Interests, I had some love affairs, if you want to call it. I mean, interest in a couple of young men who were in the YCL, the Young Communist League at that time. But I really had no extra marital or extra sex life that I can remember. I was more interested in what I was doing, and the various things I ran. And we really went an awful lot in groups, and not so much singled off.
Was there in the league, was there permissiveness in the sense of sexual permissiveness? Were young men and women sexually permissive with each other?
Yes, you had that whole argument at that time about free love and so on. There was a certain amount of drinking and smoking, and it turned me off. It's interesting, I never smoked. I never smoked a cigarette in my life because I didn't like what I saw. They were getting sick, and so on, and I didn't drink very much at that time, although I'm not against it in that sense, but it really turned me off, and I did not follow that pattern.
Was there any homosexual behavior ever described?
Not to my knowledge. I would not have recognized it. I really didn't know enough about it. I don't believe I would have recognized it.
I'm sure you would have heard about it.
Probably, but I would not have recognized it, yeah. So I don't.
Well, what about in college? Did it change for you?
Well, in college I went to Hunter, mm-hmm. which was an all-girls school. Mm-hmm. So I really, you know, we were together in the Method Student Union at that time. But again, I was, you know, like 16, 17 years old, and I was not into it too much. I really didn't get into it until I came away and got into work, and then I got married pretty fast after that.
Let's go into, let's pick up 1934. You have left New York. Mm-hmm. You're now in Chicago with your sister and brother-in-law. Mm-hmm. And what year did you get married?
I think I said 34, but I'm wondering. I think it was the fall of 34.
You were 17?
I was 17 and a half, yeah. Okay.
Where did you meet your husband?
In Chicago.
Was he also a member of the Communist Party?
He was a member of the Young Communist League and then of the Communist Party with me. I went to, I left my sister's house after I started to work in the radio industry where I worked. And in order to be closer to work, and I had decided to try it on my own by that time, I rented a room with a family. And he was one of the sons in the family that I roomed with. And we started going to the meetings together, and his brother then joined the Young Communist League also. And before long, it didn't take too long.
What was his name?
His name was Everard Hall.
Hall?
Hall, H-A-L-L.
You said that you worked for a while, and then you had to leave because you had a child. You withdrew from the, mm-hmm. the workforce. What year was it that you had your child? What year was your child then?
1938.
In March. Son or daughter?
I have a daughter. I was born in March of 1938.
How long did you stay out of the workforce before you went back?
About 5 months.
How did you work and raise your child? I mean, who took care of the child?
Well, went through a lot of processes. At the time that the child was born, we had moved in with my in-laws. Again, we had moved back, and so there was somebody at home. We were able to arrange. I had babysitters come in for certain hours, and others would come home from school, you know, so on. It was a makeshift thing, and I worked. I worked in a number of small plants, but I tried to stay close to home. We had a number of small radio places and little machine shops and so on all around where we lived. And so I didn't have to spend time traveling, you know, and so on. And I worked sometimes nights. It was a really rough period, a lot of changes. I may have worked in a dozen plants in those years because they closed down. And I had to work out each situation. When Ev got a job, he would work. We'd get a babysitter. When he didn't have a job, he would take care of the child. You know, just different ways until she got old enough to go to nursery.
Was the fact that you were working and the in-laws were helping to raise your child while you were going to work, and when your husband couldn't work and then he was raising the child, was there any problem around that?
Yeah, there were problems that developed before too long because I was more than working. I was coming home instead of just taking care of my own little house, I was taking care of the big house. I mean, I was participating, way beyond what I needed. And we ran into problems. We moved not too long after that kind of thing set up.
Were there problems with his mother?
Yeah, but it's a funny kind of problems. She was, It was two different households, but we really left as good friends, and so on. We just weren't able to work out.
Was she involved politically as her son was?
No, although in later years she became involved in a very strange way. She was a liberal person. She was very much sympathetic to many questions that were very anti-fascist, you know, and so on. My brother-in-law went to Spain and became a prisoner of Franco, and that woman turned on a force that I had never seen before, and writing and calling and speaking to get him out of jail, out of Franco jail, with the congressmen and with the senators and with the local politicians and with Washington and with the State Department. She just had a campaign going, as well as participating with all the campaigns that were going on, and she got him home.
Well, we're talking about families. When your mother was working and your father was working, do you ever remember any arguments coming up because your mother was working?
There were arguments. Basically, she was tired. She came home, and while my grandma did the cooking and so on, she wasn't able to do all of the work, so she still had the three kids to take care of, and she was working very hard. And there were arguments there. We didn't hear them too much. There were plenty of arguments about money and about, I mean, they had problems. Couldn't help but avoid it. And he was more imbued with the idea of having his own place. He always wanted to be a businessman, a salesman. He never made out. He sold butter and eggs for a while and lost money on that. Then he had a little laundry for a while, and she would help him in there. You know, there were times when she wasn't working. I mean, there were kids growing up. And so they had problems with that until he finally gave up all those schemes and actually went to work in the steam laundry, where he stayed for a long time. Then things changed a little bit at that point. It kind of settled down.
Let me ask you about the unemployment days in New York before you left for Chicago.
New York was the center of a great amount of militant activity, as were most of the large cities in the country. The unemployment was very great. We had never seen anything like that. The first thing I remember was the day the banks closed, when the banks were shut down, and I never saw anything like my folks. My uncle had gone to the bank, and the lines were so long, and when they got in, they all were told there was nothing. They could only get a small piece of it back. It was all their life savings. They had been working all the time. And they had never experienced anything like that before, so that there was a tremendous amount of frustration, and really they didn't understand it at all. Plus, I guess a lot of people didn't understand it. But that was the start of it. Then, of course, the question of jobs, and the question of seeing your friends and neighbors, and you know, the neighborhoods were full of people being evicted, and starvation of various kinds, of problems of all kinds. So that we were part of the movement that helped to form the unemployment councils, that helped to participate in the putting back of furniture and so on. And as I said, I was a little bit younger at that time. My brother and sister participated in the actual carrying back of furniture.
What is the carrying back of furniture?
When they were evicted by marshals for non-payment of rent, when the marshals went away, the people in the unemployment council would come and just put everything back in again. They learned how to turn electricity on, if there was electricity, or else the people did without. And in those days, there wasn't that much gas and electricity, and there was no hot water, and so on anyway. But they would put the people back into their apartments, and many times they would stay and guard it, you know, and so on. This was a last resort when they couldn't keep them putting them out anymore. You know, they would they were protecting the people from more misery than they were already going through. And there were demonstrations at welfare stations for relief, for rent, for clothing for the kids, you know, for the necessities. We had many kids around us who couldn't go to school. Two kids in the same family couldn't go to school on the same day because they didn't have the clothes, they didn't have the shoes, so they'd have to share. Many cases of that kind, and other things. That's really a small thing, but it gives the impact of the whole thing. Now, then the unemployment. There was a movement that developed for around the slogan "Work or Wages," and that became the rallying slogan of the country. In other words, either give us work or some form of unemployment. What later became unemployment compensation, it was really a very powerful slogan. I, as an editorializing a bit, the young people today take for granted that all these things are just given by the government and don't realize what went into the passage of a bill that would provide this. In 1931, the struggles developed to a high point, and there were massive demonstrations called for March 6th. And in New York City, before March 6th, a whole series of demonstrations took place as a build-up towards getting the people out for that day. For instance, a few weeks before that demonstration, we had a women's and children's demonstration, which was basically organized by the Young Pioneers and the Young Communist League. But remember, these were tens of thousands of people turning out, so it wasn't a small organization. It just attracted. And we went to City Hall, and we were run down by the cops on horseback. New York's finest men were on horses. Some real fun things for the kids, as far as we learned how to turn the horses away. We learned how to, they were fearful of women and children, but they weren't that fearful. That we didn't care. Many kids were arrested, and parents were arrested. And there were a whole series of these kind of demonstrations that took place in neighborhoods, in communities, you know, and specialized things like women's and children and so on, in order to be fair for it. The famous demonstration on March 6th in New York City, there were 110,000 people. They were so packed into Union Square that once you got in, you couldn't move. You were pinned exactly where it was. Now, if you read the history, at that time we had Wilbur Whalen as a mayor, and a delegation went to see him to ask him for support of the people, and he refused. And then they asked for the right to march from Union Square to City Hall, and they were refused that permit, so they started to march anyway, led by this delegation, and the horses and the cops came in, and there was a terrible bloodbath that day. Some of the things that you see today are, you know, mild as compared to what went on. They chased people for hours in the side streets and into the buildings and so on. So, you know, so this was a culmination of all these struggles. And then, you know, then later on there was the bonus marches to Washington and so on. Now, of course, I didn't participate directly, you know. But this was the kind of activity that was going on. And if you multiply this many times with community things, neighborhood things that were going on constantly, then you realize what a huge movement it was and how important it was. It was important enough that it did break through finally and win important steps.
Do you remember any of the names of the people in the delegation?
Yeah, sure. There was William Z. Foster. They were all communist leaders. Let me think a minute. Going back, it was the William Foster, Harry Raymond, Israel Antor, Charles Crumbine were among the leaders of that demonstration. Okay.
Did you leave New York because there weren't jobs there? Or?
Well, I attempted to go to work. My mother was opposed to my going to work. As I told you, she wanted me to continue in college and to become a professional. But I had no car fare. And I ran into a lot of difficulties with her. And I decided that I would never make it to the shop. And so I, on the invitation of my sister to come to Chicago, I decided that if I really wanted to get to work and in the plant and get the experience of being a working gal, that I would have to go away from home. And that's what made me leave.
When in being in the Communist Party, there are different levels of the Communist Party. Right. You start out with the Young Pioneers. And what is the next level?
The next level was the Young Communist League, which were the youth, and then we graduated into the Communist Party, which is the parent organization, or was at that time. These organizations are not around anymore. Only the Communist Party is still operating.
Well, if the league was for youth,
mm-hmm.
The Young Pioneers was also for youth, or
it was children.
It was children.
It was children, up to the age of it was supposed to be 18, but the kids were growing up older overnight because of the problems they were in. The Young Communist League gave leadership to the Young Pioneers. For many years, I was a troop leader. We called it the Young Pioneer Troop. I had together with others, the responsibility of developing the activities of a pioneer group, not just being a member. The Young Communist League, with the help of the adults, and the adults gave leadership to the youth and helped them. Now that the Young Pioneers was only one section of the work, the main work of the Young Communist League was mostly towards the shops, towards the unemployed movement, and towards the other problems of the young people.
In the Communist Party, when you were, would you say you're told to do things as opposed to asked?
I wouldn't say that that's true. I think there are discussions of what's needed to be done. Basically, the effort is to have an understanding of what you're doing and to try to reach agreement on what you're doing and so on. But it depends on various and different situations, and many times depends on the leadership you're working with. In some areas where you have a certain kind of leader, you will have more open discussion and more development of everybody's ideas. In other places, you'll just come down from the top, if you want to call it that, and you carry it out. So I don't think you could make a blanket statement like that.
That's why I asked you.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel that as a woman in the Communist Party, that perhaps maybe you weren't validated, that your opinions and your ideas were not validated as maybe a man's opinion or ideas would be?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's no question that at various points in my development in the Communist Party, I had to fight through for my leadership. In particular, when I was in union work, I really had a battle on my hands to be recognized as having something to say and being able to do things, because I was a woman. I wasn't the only one. The other women had the same problem, especially when you came close to those where the basic workforce were men. When I was in radio, there was a large number of women. It was not as difficult as when I came near to working with people in the farm implement industry, which is basically men. And there I had some really rough times until I was recognized. After that, full recognition. But every woman would go through the same thing. It wasn't just opening up the doors for women. We had plenty of problems in the Communist Party around the role of the women and so on. Sure.
Did when the women got together and did organizing, were their organizing techniques different from that of men?
No, not really. Depends. I mean, again, you're asking a kind of question that's hard to give a blanket answer. If you're organizing women, you have to get through on the basis and on the level and on the problems that the women have, the men would have to use those same problems. Probably would have trouble in organizing the women if they didn't understand those problems, and the women would do better. But if you're organizing a shop that's men and women, you would probably have to work together and find out the best methods, you know. But when you're organizing, you're going to use every method you possibly can to get through to people, whatever level you're on. If you're one-to-one, it's one level. If you're dealing with a floor, with a department, it's another level. You have to find your way to get through and convince people that they, first place, what's taking place, how they're being affected, and that they can change it, and how they can change it. So you're going to use every technique you possibly can.
Would you tell me about the International Workers' Order?
Well, the International Workers' Order was set up by the left-wingers, you would call them, of the Jewish movement. It was set up in order to attract large numbers of Jewish workers. It started off with just Jewish workers and later took in many national groups. And International Workers' Orders are various nationalities groups. The basis was good insurance, good cheap insurance. The purposes, other purposes behind the formation of it by the communists and by the radicals in the organization was to develop an understanding of the working class problems, to develop solidarity with other working class groups and with working class movements, and to teach and support working class struggles of all kinds. And they did this in various ways. Now, in the course, once the groups had been established, I remember I was a leader of the Young Pioneers, and I was in the Young Communist League at that time. And IWO decided that it might be a good idea, in order to keep the young generation from wandering off, because remember, these are all national groups, therefore they're becoming assimilated. They're not learning the languages, the culture, the history, the traditions, and so on of their groups. They decided to try to form children's groups in each one of the IWO sections, and I was part of that formation of that group that helped in the formation of the children's section, youth section of the International Workers' Order. And so it was similar to the Young Pioneers in the sense that it had both a political and economic, you know, base, and also it had cultural development, you know, and so on. And they developed groups in each one of the the Jewish section, the Russian section, the Ukrainian section, the Polish section, and so on. Developed an International Workers' Order, a youth section, and then while they were in the process of forming this and of working with it, I was at that point that I left New York.
When you say that it was politically and economically and culturally based, and you formed youth orders, I mean, I'm trying to, in my mind, imagine a group of young people, very young children, getting together. Did you have meetings? I mean, I'm trying to find out.
Yeah.
How did you teach them?
Yeah, okay. But yes, we taught them. We taught them in songs, in poems. We had noise orchestras, you know, with cymbals and bells and blocks and all kinds of things. We had plays. We followed the traditions of the national group, the history of the various holidays, and the meaning of it, the struggles that took place at various times, you know, in their history. And in some cases, I left pretty early, but later on, as they developed, they even developed basketball teams, and some of the groups had centers. Many of the organizations had centers. They had gyms. They developed sports, calisthenics, basketball teams, all kinds of things. You know, various things that youth are interested in, but giving it a working class content.
In other words, you were raising that political consciousness.
Yeah, that's right, socialist content. Now, also, they same as the Young Pioneers, they were fighting for hot lunches in the schools. You know, they would participate in various struggles that took place in different communities, based on the same idea.
What happened to the Young Pioneers and the International Workers' Order?
Well, the young Pioneers, they eventually just disappeared. I can't even tell you the exact year, but gradually disappeared. The International Workers' Order went for a longer time. Eventually, the whole IWO was wiped out by court action. What happened was that the insurance companies felt that they were being robbed because people were getting good insurance and at cheap rates, and they started to put all kinds of blocks in the way. And eventually, the IWO was declared, I believe, was declared on the Attorney General's list of subversives.
Well, did you wear a uniform? Did the Young Pioneers have a uniform?
They never really had a uniform as such, but if they had a band or if they were going to be in a parade, in the May Day parade or something, they would probably have white blouses and red neckerchiefs all over their heads or something, you know, that in that sense. There never was a kind of money that could get out. Oh, at times we had little caps, overseas caps, and various things of that kind that for attraction, for the kids. But there never was a real uniform in that sense. But when we went out to parade or things, we wore the white and the red.
Did the Young Pioneers ever, were they ever harassed by, say, government or New York Police, FBI?
Oh, sure. Many times they were arrested. Well, if they participated in demonstrations or in street meetings or anything, they were part of whatever took place. If there were rocks thrown or if there was water spilled or something, you know, or if there were police, they were part of it. They were in the demonstrations, so they were arrested. And, of course, in later years when the the witch hunt was on all the time, but they had problems in school, and their parents, not being able to speak English many times, had problems because they couldn't understand what was going on and didn't know how to answer. They had problems and later on it was on their record, you know, and so on. If you listen to some of the dossiers of people who were in the McCarthy era, you'll see that they go back into that period. But they were part of the general attack and harassment.
The revolution happened in Russia. Did it ever occur to your parents to return?
Well, I'm born, so I don't think they were in any position to consider returning. And although they would have loved it, I think they had no way of knowing what they would return to, and I really don't remember any time of them talking about going back to Russia. They had, their life was settled here and so on. And you have to remember, it's the early years of the revolution, so they didn't